It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. We begin a series of interviews with candidates running for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District seat, which covers the southeastern part of the state. The seat is currently held by House Speaker Paul Ryan, who is retiring. First up, we talk with ironworker Randy Bryce, the Democratic candidate looking to replace Ryan. Randy, good morning. Welcome to the Morning Show.
Good morning, John. How are you doing? Great to be with you.
Well, first of all, why are you running for Congress?
Well, it's been 20 years that Paul Ryan has been sitting where he is, and the hardworking people of the district haven't been represented. And Paul Ryan hasn't had public town halls. He hasn't been listening to us, hasn't been responsive to us. And more recently, when he decided he was going to go after protections that were afforded by health care, I got to the point, you know, that's something very personal for me, being a cancer survivor. My mom has MS. My dad has Alzheimer's. I decided that instead of allowing him to repeal and replace our health care, it was time to repeal and replace him.
Well, for better or worse, a lot of people see this race as a referendum on the seat's current occupant, House Speaker Paul Ryan, who's retiring. Voters seem to have liked him. He's represented the district for nearly two decades. So how do you convince those voters in this district that change is what's needed?
Well, Paul Ryan has talked about his plans for protecting Social Security, as he calls it, but that was just merely privatizing it, turning it into a coupon care type system. And we just saw recently, after he gave away $1.5 trillion to the richest people in the country, I mean, this is a tax plan that 83% of the wealthiest people in the country were going to benefit from while on our backs. It's something that now I'm going to have to pay for tools on the job site. We can't deduct mileage. For working people, it's going to cost us more. But after seeing that tax scam, 1 week later, he came out and he admitted, well, now we have to make cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. He calls them entitlements, but these are paid benefits that people have been contributing to their entire working life.
Well, in response to the ballooning federal deficit, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell recently said that the only way to lower that deficit would be to cut social safety net programs like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. That doesn't sound like something you'd be willing to accept. Why?
Absolutely not. These are things that help keep our elderly people out of poverty. A lot of people don't have pensions to rely on, 401ks. This is what a lot of people depend on. This is their lifeline to keeping a roof over their heads, to getting some kind of, you know, some amount of food on the table. We can't allow, it's one of the most successful social programs in the history of the United States. And nobody's done more to attack it than Paul Ryan and the Republicans. And it's the number two issue. It's following health care very closely behind is something that people desperately need and depend on.
So if cutting the social safety net is not one of the solutions for the deficit, then what is the alternative? Do we need to raise taxes? Do we need to find cuts elsewhere? What do you want to do here?
I want to stop rewarding the wealthiest people in the country who donate to campaigns that turn them from elections into auctions. There's no way that, this trickle-down experiment that started under President Reagan has been shown to be a failure. It's just contributing to the income inequality, and especially right here in Wisconsin, where the middle class is disappearing faster than any other state in the country. It's a direct correlation to these horrible, extreme Republican policies that they're jamming down our throats.
All right, well, let's talk about a few issues now, starting with the economy and jobs. You're from Janesville, a city hit hard by the Great Recession and the closure of the city's GM plant. As a member of Congress, how would you get people back to work?
Well, first, I'm from Caledonia, the other end of the district, but Janesville is in the district. And it's not just the GM plant in Janesville, but we also had an American Motors plant in Kenosha. It's an empty field now. We need to actually do things that are going to fight to keep American jobs here. The person that I'm running against has made a career of literally outsourcing jobs from Wisconsin to Mexico or China. We need to look, looking at tech jobs, and it's got to be some newer ways to get training to people as well, because once you're laid off and you don't have access, you don't know where your next paycheck's coming from, you're not going to have money to go back to school to get retrained for something. So that's why there's also a big focus on retraining workers, on educating our workforce, because to have the best educated workforce is going to make us competitive globally.
Well, let's talk about health care for a minute. During the last session, we saw a failed attempt at repealing the Affordable Care Act, followed by changes to the law. In your view, what needs to happen with that law or just health care in general?
Well, right now, we need to protect the things that are in place, you know, especially pre-existing conditions. And unfortunately, Scott Walker is directing Brad Schimmel, the Wisconsin AG, to force ahead a lawsuit that's going to take that away from so many people. I've been in favor of Medicare for All, and that's a system. There's even a right-wing study done by the Koch brothers that have shown, based on their findings, that we would actually save $10 trillion over the next few years if we had something like that in place. And it's the right thing to do. People deserve to have access to health care because right now, even if they are insured, they can't afford to use it. People are stretching out their medications, especially, you know, I'm hearing about diabetics that are stretching out their insulin so that because they can't afford to go get it as frequently as it's prescribed. Or a lady that goes to the pharmacist and she has to get 10 medications but can only afford 3. So she's negotiating with the pharmacist, which 3 do I absolutely need to stay alive? That's not an adequate way of administering health care. And every other industrialized country around us has some kind of universal health care. You know, if it's good enough for them, why isn't it good enough for us?
We're talking with Randy Brice, who's a Democratic candidate running in Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. This is part of our series of candidate interviews on The Morning Show. Okay, besides the economy and health care, what do you think is one of the biggest issues affecting the 1st District, and how would you work to tackle it in Congress?
Well, a huge issue is our infrastructure, condition of our infrastructure. And one of the committees I'd love to serve on is transportation. With my background being a union iron worker, that's something I've done for the last 21 years. I'm constantly looking under bridges when I drive underneath them at the kind of condition that they're in. And our roads and bridges are in horrible shape. It's a great way to get people back to work, and our infrastructure is due. The life expectancy of the projects that were built was like 50, 75 years ago, and that was done. That's how one of the ways we got out of the Great Depression was by building it, and that turned us into a superpower. It's time to reinvest in the United States because it's due. It's due to be reinvested in, to have our bridges upgraded, roads upgraded, and it's also a great way to get people back to work.
The 1st District will call Foxconn home. Foxconn, of course, a company that received billions of dollars in state tax incentives to locate here. As a result, there are some mixed feelings about the company's presence in southeastern Wisconsin. So as the district's representative, what would you do to ensure that the state receives a good return on its investment?
Well, that's the issue that we have right now. There's nothing in writing that's saying that the people that paid it's $4.5 billion of taxes that they're receiving from the state government. There's no guarantee that Wisconsin people are going to benefit. That's why I went to testify when they were trying to repeal prevailing wage or project labor agreements that are able to be used on jobs that have state taxes attached to them. Because with those things in place, we're able to say, you know, we want a 30% participation rate of minorities from the area who are under or unemployed, so that we can get our people back to work, to make sure that those people who are paying the taxes are going to benefit from it. If good paying jobs are there, fantastic. But the people that are paying deserve to know how we're going to benefit. And I think that's something we also need to keep in mind, that we have to protect our environmental protections need to be kept in place. They want to use millions of gallons of water from Lake Michigan. I think that needs to be, we need to keep our eye on that. And as well as Illinois is threatening to sue us for air quality issues. So it's more than just the jobs themselves. It's going to affect the community in a lot of different ways. And if we're going to benefit from it, we need to have assurances, not only that people are going to be helped by it, but also to find a way to make people that need to benefit from it to be allowed to access those jobs.
We got about a minute or so left here, Randy. America is a divided country right now, and our political parties seem to represent that. That said, what role do you see, if any, for bipartisanship in this position?
Well, one thing I'm looking forward to doing once I'm lucky enough to be elected is to, you know, like do something to work with veterans. Being a veteran myself, I know what it's like being discharged, coming home, and struggling to find a job. I think we can find enough people on the other side of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, who doesn't want to say, yes, let's do something to help veterans. Once we see that we're able to work together with the new Congress, that's going to help us move forward. It's not going to have us look at each other as adversaries. It's going to get us in the same room and get us walking together, figuring something out as Americans, because our veterans sure do deserve it. And we need help, not just physically, but taking care of ourselves mentally as well when we return.
All right, Randy, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for the invitation. Hope you have a fantastic day.
Well, thank you. Randy Brice is an iron worker and Democratic candidate for the race for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District seat. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. While things appear to be going well for UW-Madison, it's a different story for the rest of the University of Wisconsin system. In recent years, many of the state's UW campuses have seen declining enrollment, resulting in lost tuition revenue and creating tighter and tighter budgets. Is it time for the UW to rethink its strategy to make its campuses more sustainable? My guest says yes. What do you think? What efforts do you think would boost enrollment at UW's institutions? Do you attend classes at one of these schools or work at one? Have you seen the impact of these lower numbers and reduced budgets? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. John Torinas is the chairman of Serigraph Incorporated. He's also a former business journalist and former business editor at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He now blogs at johntorinas.com, and his recent piece there is 25 UW Campuses Increasingly Strapped for Funds. John Torinas, welcome to the Morning Show.
Good morning, John.
You write that what we're looking at here is the tale of two university systems, UW-Madison and the other 25 campuses that are increasingly strapped for funds. How stark is that difference?
Well, fortunately, our flagship university, of which we're all extraordinarily proud, UW-Madison, is doing really, really well. I mean, they've got multiple sources of funding as opposed to the other 25 campuses that are really stuck with tuition funding and state support. So, you know, Madison's got, they get $1 billion in R&D every year, mostly from federal dollars. They've got $9 billion in foundations over there. And then the earnings off of those foundations go back to support the university. They're guaranteed almost a freshman class of 3,600, which is the promise they made. They take 3,600 Wisconsin kids every year as freshmen. And that's sort of a guarantee because it's the first choice of a lot of kids. So they get their 3,600 regardless of what's happening on the other 25. And so they just have a surfeit. They've got UW Health, which is a $2.5 billion enterprise that throws off $200 million in profits. So UW-Madison, despite when the legislature cuts and the governor cuts the general purpose revenues for the university and freezes the tuition, it doesn't really affect Madison much because they can replace it with other revenues. So, for instance, I don't think UW-Madison, in fact, I know, has cut hardly no positions over the last decade when the funds were diminishing on the other campuses. So, meanwhile, I'm pretty connected with UW-Milwaukee. In the last 3 years, we've taken out 90 staff positions out of about 700. So, you know, the cuts are real at the other campuses.
Well, you know, the irony of talking about two different systems is that until the late 60s, we actually had that. There were two separate systems. There were two separate boards of regents. The so-called state university campuses had their own system, and then we combined them to make them more efficient. And so, you know, that's kind of just a little history of kind of how we got to this point. But let's talk about the enrollment at the decline in enrollment at these state campuses. What kinds of numbers are we seeing here?
Well, we're down about across the system. There used to be about 180,000 plus students across the whole, across the 26 campuses, and we're now about 170. So we've lost about 10,000 students over the last decade. And that's the equivalent of a, you know, UW La Crosse. So it's significant, you know. And if you figure maybe there's a net of $7,000 a student, I mean, times 10,000 students, that's $70 million a year that went away. Incidentally, your recollection of history, John, is really good. My Aunt Mary Minahan Walter was a regent in 1971 when they had the last reorganization of the university, and that's when they combined the state university system with the UW system. So that was 47 years ago is the last time we took a step back and looked at the structure of our university.
Well, I was a college freshman at Wisconsin State University Superior when the change happened, so I remember that.
Yeah, it generally worked. You know, I think it's been a good lash up over these 47 years, half a century, but it's time to take another look at it. Times have changed.
Well, let's talk about how
have
we got here.
Did you change at all, John?
Did I? Well, I got grayer and fatter. So how did we get here? What explains why we're seeing this happen?
Well, believe it or not, way, way down deep, and I just read a big study on it, what's really hurting the universities, the public universities across the country, is the explosion of health costs at the state level. And that's raging increases for Medicaid, big increases for state employees, way above the normal rate of inflation, and also the prisoners. So what's happening is health cost inflation, I call it hyperinflation, is crowding out all of the other priorities in our society, including university education, K-12, even public safety, environmental initiatives. The health costs are the way, way down deep underlying issue. And so then when all of the new dollars coming into the state treasury have to be used for covering these higher health costs, there's nothing left for anybody else.
So higher health costs and maybe some tax cuts that didn't pay for themselves?
So if you go back to Governor Doyle, this is more than, 12 years ago, and when he came in, he was in the middle of the Great Recession, and obviously the revenues stopped flowing as healthily into the state coffers, so he had to make a cut, and I think he cut $250 million out of the state budget, went from $1.25 billion down to about $1 billion. So then he gets out of office, and Walker comes in, and he's a fiscal conservative, and they're facing these health costs increase as well, and so they take another whack of a couple hundred million. So the state support for our public university system has declined under both Democratic governors and Republican governors, Democratic legislators and Republican legislatures. So that's been the big hit. Plus, then on top of that, over the last 6 years, they've frozen tuition. So where is a UW-Milwaukee, where is a UW-Stevens Point going to go for more funds? You know, the tuitions are cut. The GPR dollars are cut, and enrollment's fallen off. You know, it's obviously a triple whammy.
Yeah. Has this been an issue on the campaign trail as the gubernatorial race winds up toward its big conclusion in a week or two? Has either Governor Walker or candidate Tony Evers made any comments about UW's system tuition?
This has been sort of a disappointing campaign in that a lot of the large issues in this state have gone unaddressed. Some of them have gone addressed. I mean, Tony Evers is talking about more money for K-12 and then, funding at a two-thirds level of all local expenses. And then Governor Walker followed on, so they're both on that same position. So there's been some discussion of education funding generally in the state, but neither of them touched the university problem, the conundrum that the universities face.
Who needs to be setting the strategy for the UW system? Is it the governor, system president, the regents, someone else?
Well, if you talk to the regents, and I have, they'll tell you that seldom do they really do any big picture thinking about the university. They've got a lot of stuff coming at them. It's a staff-driven organization, so they get this big stack of papers at every regents meeting, and they end up in sort of the middle-level issues. But they never spend a whole lot of time stepping back and saying, okay, let's assess where we as a citizenry are with public education at the higher level. They did make a strategic move recently and they had to because the expenses were so high, and that's when they decided to merge the 13 two-year campuses called the colleges, UW colleges,
right,
into the four-year system.
Okay, we'll come back to that. John Torinas, we're at news time, but our conversation will continue in just a moment. John Torinas is the chairman of Serigraph Incorporated and a former business journalist and business editor at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Well, things might look rosy at the UW-Madison campus. The picture isn't so pleasant at the UW system's 25 other campuses around the state. My guest says that the UW needs to do something about that, and we're wondering what you think. What would you suggest the UW do to increase enrollments at its campuses outside of Madison? Maybe you're a student at one of these campuses or work there. What impacts have you seen from budget cuts? And if you live in a community where there's a UW campus, how have dropping enrollments and budget cuts had an impact where you live? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. My guest, John Torinas, is the chairman of Serigraph Incorporated. He's also a former business journalist and former business editor at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He now blogs at johntorinas.com, and his recent piece there is 25 UW Campuses Increasingly Strapped for Funds. So, John, just before the news break, we were talking about changes that the regents had and that the system had made to try to address some of these issues. One of those was incorporating the two-year colleges into the UW system and assigning them to nearby four-year schools. Do you think that was a good idea?
Well, that's an example, John, of strategic reorganization, and it almost had to happen because the enrollments were dropping more sharply at the two-year colleges than they were in the 4 years. And partly, you know, part of it is a hot job market. Kids are able to jump into jobs as opposed to having to go to school to get ready for a job. So, but that's an example of, then there's six or seven other things that could be done if we could get a blue ribbon commission of the best and brightest in Wisconsin and take step back and take a look at our system. In a way, if you think about it, that represents a regionalization of the university system. So, for instance, in Milwaukee, where I live, or near Milwaukee, the University of Wisconsin, Washington County in West Bend was merged into UWM, UW-Milwaukee, and UW-Waukesha was merged into UW-Milwaukee. So now what you really have is a regional organization in southeastern Wisconsin. Well, that could be replicated across the state. You know, for instance, up in the northeastern part of the state, UW-Oshkosh and UW-Green Bay already work heavily with New North, which is the big economic development organization covering 18 northeastern counties. So, you know, you could regionalize the university. You know, maybe turn loose UW-Madison, cut it loose. Let them go off on their own and fund themselves. I think they'd love that to happen. Let them buy their way out of it by contributing some funds on the way out the door to the other 25 campuses. So there are, if you were a CEO and you were looking at this lash up, you'd be looking at some fairly large scale ideas on how to right size and organize the university to be more effective. I would argue that the economy of Wisconsin works in regions, so there ergo, and if the UW system is the engine of the new economy, then why not reorganize the university along regional lines.
I'm curious, when you talk about a Blue Ribbon Commission, who needs to be at the table there?
Well, you'd want all the stakeholders, obviously the people from inside the university, the faculty, and the regents, but you'd also want, you know, there's some business organizations there. You'd want the unions there. You'd want the medical community there. Heck, it's almost 20% of the U.S. of our economy now is healthcare. You know, you'd want all the stakeholders. You want the road builders. I mean, there was a BBOL commission back in 2010 that sort of looked at some of these things. BBOL, think big, and I think we had 30 different stakeholders involved in that exercise.
Some campuses, like UW-Superior, where I live, and in fact the studios I'm broadcasting from this morning are on that campus, and UW-Stevens Point have already taken matters into their own hands. Superior has suspended over 20 academic programs. Stevens Point is looking at cutting humanities and social science majors in favor of STEM programs. What do you think of campuses moving in a direction like this?
Well, I think you just have to face reality, John. You know, if the funds aren't there, you know, at the end of the day, it's always about money, right? About the resources available. And if the resources aren't available, then you simply, it's like in a company, if your top line falls off, you've got to reorganize the company to fit the available revenues. So I think those chancellors on those two campuses are doing what they have to do. So I think the term out of necessity was used in your earlier broadcast on UW, or piece on UWO. So out of necessity, Stevens Point and Superior had to make some adjustments. And then, so it's sort of a move towards specialization, and that might be one of the answers that would come out of a Blue Ribbon Commission. They're going to say, okay, we got 7 journalism programs in the state, let's cut it down to 4. And if some kid from Superior wants to get his journalism and it's no longer available at Superior, and I'm just using that as a hypothetical example, then maybe, you know, he goes to Eau Claire for his journalism, or takes it on distance learning, or takes part of it online. In other words, rearrange and be flexible and nimble and make the disciplines available, but not everywhere.
How is the money shared within the UW system?
Well, roughly, there's a little black box over there. It's a formula that they use to allot the general purpose revenues, the state taxes among the campuses. And roughly, it's about $1 billion a year, John, and about half of that goes to Madison, and the other half goes to the other 25 campuses. The formula for divvying it up among the other 25 campuses is a little murky, and I think only a few people really know what's inside that black box.
Yeah, and it always seems, from the perspective of the campuses outstate, that Madison seems to get more than its share, and that perception probably will never get away. You mentioned splitting UW-Madison from the rest of the system. That's not a new idea, and I'm sure you'll remember what happened the last time it was proposed. Considering where we're at now, does it make sense to revisit the idea?
Yeah, I think so. That was Chancellor Biddy Martin. That's 2 chancellors ago who proposed a spinoff of UW-Madison, largely because they can self-fund if they want to. And it wasn't met with too much support at the time. But, you know, flash forward, we're 5-10 years down the road since then, and the financing crisis, I'll call it, is sharper now than it was then. So it might take time to look at it. I had one very smart guy I know. I said, well, what is UW-Madison in the healthcare business for? Why don't they spin off UW-Health, and they could maybe pick up a couple $1 billion? And so they spin it out, raise a couple $1 billion, turn that couple billion over to the 25 campuses, and let Madison go merrily on its way. And incidentally, I don't think any of us should want to diminish UW-Madison. It is a fantastic organization doing great research for all of mankind, and we want that to keep happening. But it just is an incongruous fit with the rest of the system at this point.
And we're just about out of time here, or we're getting rapidly to that point. Anytime we talk about stuff like this, we also return to the question of whether or not any changes would go against the Wisconsin idea. John, as you see it, is there a way to make the university system sustainable and preserve the Wisconsin idea?
Yeah, I think that's the essence of it, John. You know, I don't see too much impact from UW-Madison over in West Bend, Wisconsin, where I live. I love their graduates, by the way, and I have a good number of them working at my company, and invariably they end up being leaders in the company. So their main product, their export, is their graduates. But I don't see a lot of other impact. So, you know, it impacts Dane County heavily. I would even be a little bit tongue-in-cheek and call it the University of Dane County, University of Wisconsin-Dane County. So I think, you know, they could be independent and serve the greater purposes of mankind as a great research university and then set up the rest of the system on a regional basis to serve the local economies better.
One thing we haven't mentioned, and it always comes up in the discussion, do you think the UW needs to close some campuses?
Well, that always comes up, and I don't. That would take some intense analysis. I think you could consider things, and I'm not advocating any one of these because you got to do the work. You got to do the analysis, John. You can't just do hip shots. But for instance, UW-Superior could be, you know, amalgamated with, say, Eau Claire, and UW-Parkside could be amalgamated with UW-Milwaukee. So there are things you could do to cut some administrative overheads and then mix and match the course offerings at those campuses so that, you know, a kid in Superior and a kid in near Parkside could still have, you know, get into the disciplines that he wants to.
And John, we're out of time. I appreciate you joining us this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
John Torinos is the chairman of Serigraph Incorporated and a former business editor at the Milwaukee Journal. I'm John Munson. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. As part of WPR's ongoing election coverage, we're featuring interviews with candidates on the 2018 midterm ballot. This week, we're talking with candidates for Wisconsin's 5th Congressional District. Democrat Tom Paulswich is a small business owner and Navy veteran, according to his campaign website. He's running against incumbent Republican Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner. Tom, good morning and welcome to the morning show.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start out with why you're running to represent the 5th Congressional District.
Really, a couple of different reasons. First and foremost, though, looking back, you know, looking at the history of this country, it's been a while since we've had a vision for where we really want to go. And I look at a congressman like Jim Sensenbrenner, who's been in office for 40 years. He's really not providing any leadership in that area. And I just really feel that we need to create a vision of where we want to get to and put down some goals to say, here's what we need to start doing next in order to start moving the country in the direction we're going. And because we don't have that, right now we're subject to what happens on a daily basis. And I've been talking to a lot of people over the last 6 to 12 months, and people are just anxious about where we are.
Well, on your campaign website, you talk about health care as being a right that everyone in this country should have access to, and universal health care is the only logical solution to our country's health care needs. Is that part of your vision for the future?
Absolutely. We view health care as a right, not a privilege. Most of the other developed countries on the planet have already figured this out, and we're falling behind in regards to health care. And plus, there's so many people who worry about whether they're going to have the health care they need. And the interesting thing now is we have this incredibly expensive system, and people are reticent to actually use it just because they know going into a doctor is going to cost them money that they don't have.
Why is universal health care the only option?
Well, it's not the only option. I think some kind of single-payer system, getting to that is going to take some time. There are about 2.5 to 3 million jobs in the health insurance industry that will have to figure out how to relocate. But the bottom line is people should be able to understand that their health is not going to be an impediment to having a job or starting a business or just living their lives.
Tom Paulswich is a Democrat running in Wisconsin's 5th Congressional District. He faces incumbent Republican Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner. How does your experience in finance and as a small business owner relate to the work that you do in Congress?
Yeah, great question. You know, first off, my 6 years in the Navy, those 4 years on a nuclear submarine, really taught me servant leadership. And I'm a big believer in servant leadership. I think people should lead for the benefit of all, not for the benefit of themselves. And then I was in banking. I called it my Wisconsin banking tour. I was in banking for 15 years, really dealing with risk management for banks and dealing with Wall Street. And I had to watch the economy every single day. And I really understand how the economy works. It's really about wage growth. Job growth is great, and it's good to have jobs. Wage growth is the thing that really gets the economy moving and continues moving. And then last but not least is just owning a business with my brother, and we're a business coaching company, and we teach small business owners how to grow their business. We've actually been able to grow about 2,000 net new jobs here in Southeast Wisconsin just over the last 4 years.
One of the problems all across the United States right now is that our infrastructure is in need of a lot of work. Roads and bridges are crumbling. Both parties believe that the country's physical infrastructure needs improvement, but there's disagreement over how to pay for it. As a member of Congress, what would you seek to do?
Well, I think first and foremost, we have to pay for what we've already decided that we're going to have run through the federal government. This tax cut, this previous tax cut that the administration and the Republicans put together, has really created a problem for our economy and our problem for our government. Because right now we're running close to trillion-dollar deficits in an economy that's doing well. You know, if you look over the long term, it really helps to have a government that balances their budget or runs a slight surplus when things are good, so that there's money to prime the pump when we run into a recession. Next time we run into a recession, the budget deficit's going to grow even deeper. We just have to raise taxes to an appropriate level. I don't think anybody wants to pay more taxes, but I think we all understand that we have to pay for the services. I'm a big believer that we need to make government more efficient and more effective and not vilify government. We need to really figure out how to make organizations work better for the dollars that we put into it.
The recent United Nations climate report had some dire warnings about our planet's future. As a member of Congress, how would you address the threat of climate change?
Yeah, climate change is real. It's happening. It's science-based. And right now we have an administration that not only doesn't want to talk about it, but has scrubbed all their websites of any evidence of it. And we really need to move forward and understand that climate change is real. I think probably a couple of weeks ago, the Nobel Economics Prize went to a couple of gentlemen who talked about a carbon tax, and carbon tax idea has been around for decades now. We need to start understanding that the cost of burning fossil fuels has an impact on all of us, and we need to turn that around quickly. I think investing in solar, investing in wind, investing in alternative energy, there's actually more jobs in the alternative energy marketplace than there is in fossil fuels.
So what do you think is the most important issue facing the 5th Congressional District?
I think in this district, it's really about health care. I would say, you know, based on what people want to do with their lives, I think starting new businesses and job portability and mobility is very difficult because people have to understand they need to get their health insurance first, especially if you have pre-existing conditions. So healthcare needs to get fixed because I believe I'm a business owner and I talk to other business owners and we've never understood why we're involved in healthcare. It really doesn't make any sense to have businesses involved when we can get people covered. And in fact, we'll have more job growth because there'll be more businesses that start because people will be able to start a business without having to think about healthcare. But more importantly, we're moving to a different kind of economy, an economy where jobs, people will be much more portable and do a lot more what I call independent contracting. In order to do that, though, they're going to need solid health insurance and health coverage. And I just think it opens up a whole different way of doing business and when we can get everybody covered.
One of the big issues on healthcare is pre-existing conditions. That's the center of a lot of debates. The idea that the ACA would go away and we would no longer have that kind of coverage is one of the things that's been an issue in the campaign. How would you address this?
Well, it's interesting because I think both parties right now are talking about they don't want to get rid of the clause where you can get insurance with pre-existing conditions, and they don't want to get rid of the clause that you can cover your children up to age 26. So both parties in an agreement on that, but one party's talking about getting rid of the ACA, and if you get rid of the ACA, you actually get rid of those two things. So what I don't understand is why the Republicans aren't passing a bill to codify that and say no matter what happens, we're going to have those pre-existing conditions covered and children up to age 26 covered. Because here at the state level, Brad Schimler, as Attorney General, is suing to get rid of those clauses. And to me, if you're going to sue to get rid of them and then talk about how you're going to keep them, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
The last Congress left behind a lot of unanswered questions about immigration, for example. As a result, the issue will likely be a priority when the next Congress convenes. Both parties agree there needs to be something done, but there's no agreement on what the fix would look like. What would be your approach?
As far as the wall goes?
Well, as far as immigration policy in general.
Immigration, you know, we're a country of immigrants, and I think it's really important for us to understand that we need immigration to grow our economy. Right now, there's about 1.1 job openings for everyone who's unemployed right now who wants a job. So immigrants are not coming here to take our jobs. They're not coming here to commit crimes. They're coming here to work. And there's a lot of jobs, especially in Wisconsin, there's a lot of jobs that immigrants do. And I think it's important for us to, you know, fix immigration in a way that we make immigration easier and faster, because it really helps our economy. There's only really two ways to grow the economy, is people either make more money and spend it, or we make more people. And immigration provides an influx of people that want to be here and want to participate and want to help grow the economy.
Congress, much like the rest of America, is extremely polarized at the moment. Our legislators and our neighbors feel pretty strongly one way or another on almost every issue. How would you work to address the country's needs in a bipartisan way?
Yeah, there's a couple of things going on right now. There's a group called No Labels. There's another group that's working on creating a different infrastructure in Congress so that more bills see the light of day. I think a while ago there were a lot more bills that used to come to actual vote and get passed in Congress, and we've really narrowed that down because of partisanship. So I think it's important for us, especially for me when I get there. One of the things is running in this, I will call it a red area as a Democrat, is when I go to Washington, I'm going to have to work to solve issues from a bipartisan standpoint. I personally believe that's good for the country also. I think there's a lot of ways that we can work together. I'm a business owner. I've been working with other business owners in Waukesha County. You know, very rarely do we talk politics, but most of the time we talk about issues that need to get solved. I'm part of the Waukesha County Business Alliance. I'm part of the Economic Development Council there. And we talk about things that need to get fixed, like workforce development and trades, jobs. So there's a lot of things that we can work on. But the bottom line is Congress has to really understand that they work for the people and not for the special interests.
What would you like to leave us with? Why should listeners cast a ballot for Tom Paulswich?
Couple different things. Well, first off, it's Tom Paulswich.
Oh,
so,
sorry.
That's all right. I've been correcting people through the campaign because it's one of the hardest parts is getting your name out there. But the bottom line, the reason why I'm running and the reason why I think we need things to be different is we need people who want to work together. And we need people that understand we have some serious issues, and we need to start solving those serious issues. And we need to get going on them now. Climate change can't wait. We can't wait another 2 years to see if this Congress or the next Congress is going to be able to do something. Healthcare needs to get fixed. Education, we need a lot more education reform. Student loan debt is crushing. There's a whole bunch of things that we need to get working on. And right now we keep electing people that aren't really interested in changing those things. And these are big picture items. They're not going to be easy to solve. But at a minimum, we should be talking about them. We should be passing laws that at least start to change those things. And that's what I want to do. I want to go to Washington, and I want to start getting things done.
All right. And that's where we'll leave it. Tom Paulswich, thank you so much for joining us this hour.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Tom Paulswich is a Navy veteran and small business owner, according to his website, and is running as a Democrat to represent Wisconsin's 5th congressional district. He faces incumbent Republican Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner, who we will also be talking with. I'm John Munson. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.